south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Now, you know, just lately I've been getting emails about the condition of the water down here in Latin America. Now, they're not talking about is it polluted or not polluted, because we know it is inland. Without exception, practically every lake and river in Latin America is polluted, and you should never drink from it. Unless, of course, you've got a nice water filter, which I'm sure you do if you listen to this program. In fact, I'll send you the plans for my personal water filter setup that I make nothing off of, because you just go out and get the parts yourself at any big pool supply outfit. Just email me at theexpatfiles@gmail.com and ask for my water filter plans. Of course, it's not really a portable system. I have it under the counter at my sink, and I can just easily make up a 5-gallon jug of ultra-clean water in maybe 10 minutes. So what I do is I have about 4 of those 5-gallon jugs tucked away in the closet, just as a precaution in case I ever need them. For example, generally twice a year in any big gated community that has its own well, you'll get a flyer or a notice on your front door that says they'll be changing or fixing the pump or scrubbing out the tanks or changing tubes, whatever. And no one in the colony will have water for 24 hours or perhaps longer. Of course, not to worry, if you have your own cistern and an auxiliary pump in your house, which I always recommend, then that shouldn't bother you at all. Your cistern will last you for a month if you got a big enough one, which I also recommend. That means 5,000 or 6,000 gallons. And then, when the guys in charge of the water in your colony, they're called fontaneros, by the way, like fountain, fontaneros. There's a word you won't have trouble remembering at all, because it sounds like water fountain. Now, I don't know who thought of that word, but it does make sense, doesn't it? Anyway, when these fontaneros cut off the main water supply to do whatever they're going to do, your own personal auxiliary pump and cistern will kick in. And you just might hear that motor switch on. But if it's out in your garage or in a shed somewhere, you might not hear it at all, and the whole process will be seamless. And by the way, that little self-contained pump, along with its little attached tank that has a rubber bladder and an air chamber in it, runs anywhere from about $150 to $200. But do remember, if you have a cistern and it's underground, like I recommend, the water has to get pumped out of there somehow, and if the electricity goes off because there's a huge storm or a hurricane or a tree fell down, whatever, that's why you want to have a couple of 5-gallon jugs of pure water around. Remember, that's the pure water you're going to use for drinking and cooking. You can figure that if you're a good conservationist, each person in the house could easily get by on a gallon of that water a day. And as for that water in your big cistern, if you don't have electricity to get it out with your pump, well, you can just pull the cover off of it and dip it out by the bucket if you want to use it to take a Cub Scout or Boy Scout bath or whatever. Which begs the question, what would a Girl Scout do? I wonder. But, you know, you really don't have to ever be in that position at all if you have a little gas or diesel generator. Then, if the power goes out, just fire that thing up and plug your auxiliary pump into it, and you've got water and electricity. For those of you who want to know these things, a small generator like that, maybe 2,500 watts, that's all you need, you can pick up for between $300 and $500. Used ones go for half that. And don't forget, you need to have some fuel around, so pick up at least 2 plastic or metal 5-gallon fuel tanks, have them full, and outside in a shed or in the garage somewhere. Then you really are set for short-term emergencies. So, like I said, I always try to purify my own water. And along with a couple of 5-gallon jugs, I also fill up about 3 or 4 1-gallon jugs to stick in the back of my car. In the trunk, of course, because then they're not exposed to the sun. As you know, you don't want any water in a plastic container exposed to heat and sun. Never. So in the car, I have 2 glass bottles. In my case, they're Welch's and Snapple bottles, because down here, you can still get those bottles in glass with twist-off caps. So they're perfect water containers inside the car where there might be some sun. That is to say, there will be sun and heat and plenty of it. And I have 1 of those plastic bottles rolling around on the floor in the backseat of my car somewhere, and I have the other one shoved in one of those plastic cup holders that's standard equipment on every car these days. That said, I always have a spare gallon in the trunk of my car for whenever one of my glass bottles in front goes empty. Oh, and by the way, when I'm traveling without a car, which is quite a bit too, I always carry my trusty Sawyer portable water filter with the Katadyn charcoal filter adapter. So when I'm on the road, I just stick the adapter on any water faucet, and there I have pure water, 24/7. And where that comes in really handy is if you happen to be on a cruise. Because, you know, those cruise ships really heavily treat their water, and I don't trust a thing about it. I'm sure you've seen nasty things in the news lately about cruise lines and hundreds of people getting sick, right? Well, I've been on quite a few cruises and I've never been sick. Of course, I always purify my own water when I'm on them. And I take other precautions too, which I won't go into now. But just note that bottled water they give you in cruise ships and, in fact, in every decent hotel, I wouldn't drink it myself. However, you can use it to brush your teeth and, like Expat Eddie says, to lighten up your scotch. Anyway, before I get any more sidetracked, I was talking about water down here in Latin America. Not drinking water, but water that comes out of your tap and the reservoirs and watersheds that feed them. And I know these recent emails are concerned from people who see that there are historic droughts causing big problems in the western U.S. So people want to know how bad the drought is affecting Latin America, if at all. Well, for one thing, based on a lot of traveling in Latin America, you'd think there was a multi-country drought going on, since when you turn on the tap water in any house that has a municipal water supply, that is a government-run and operated water supply, you almost never get water out of the tap 24/7. I'd say 12 hours or so is the norm for Latin American municipal water users. Now, you notice that, of course, in homes that don't have cisterns that kick in when the municipal water shuts off. Which is why smart people who are forced to be on municipal water systems here because they're in the city or whatever and can't drill a well have at least a small cistern, usually on the roof, that slowly but surely in dribs and drabs fills up at night when no one's using the tap water. Now, another water question I often get from people is, do all municipal water systems suck like that? Can I always count on the sad fact that at least sometime during the day there won't be any water at all? Well, it's like this. There are cities and subdivisions and districts that have continuous water supply from a municipality, but the flow and pressure are piss poor. So then, what would you rather have? Would you rather have 12 hours or so of decent water supply and pressure, and then almost nothing? Or have water 24/7, but with piss poor pressure and flow? Remember, you won't have to deal with any of that if you have your own personal cistern and a pump. Better yet, live in a little bit upscale gated community that has its own independent water supply, that is a well and its own reservoir, etc. Then you never have low pressure or flow and you never run out of water. But even then, you still want a cistern and your own private pump in case they shut down the system to do some repairs or the electricity goes out, etc. Now, when I first came down to Latin America, I think it was, 25 or so years now? Can't believe it. I spent the first couple of years in Costa Rica, and while there, back then, the Costa Ricans, rightfully so, were very proud of their water supply and the cleanliness of their water. And with good reason, too, because that happened to be one of the very few places in Latin America where you did get high pressure, volume, and flow 24/7 and relatively clean-looking water from the municipality. Now, of course, I wouldn't drink from it, even though 25 years ago, I'd say a good 95% of Costa Rica's population drank direct from the tap, and so did gringos and tourists, because they were advised it was clean enough to drink. Now, you know, I can't tell you the times I was sitting around with a bunch of Costa Ricans, and when they were talking about the differences between their country and the rest of the countries in Latin America, one of the things they'd always bring up was that they had so much water that they could supply the rest of Central America anyway without any problems at all. In fact, back then I even listened to some schemes whipped up by gringos and Costa Ricans to pipe the water or have it delivered into Nicaragua, which was noted for having really, really ugly and contaminated municipal water. Back then, I heard so many Costa Ricans laugh and pat themselves on the back about their great water supply, etc. So naturally, they developed all those casual water-wasting habits that we first-worlders practice so well. Like, for example, vastly overwatering their flora, gardens, lawns, and golf courses, etc. Taking 2, even 3 showers a day and leaving the water run 3, even 4 times as long as it has to. Now, that reminds me, Costa Ricans would always tell me how much cleaner they were than the rest of the citizens of Latin America because they could just take so many showers and let the water run forever. In fact, back then, I just had to believe that because it really was the only country in Latin America where people used water as freely as they do up in the United States. I know I've told you some very positive things about the water supply in Costa Rica, but you didn't hear the rest of it. Don't be thinking that there's something geologically distinct or even magical about the water tables and reservoirs in Costa Rica. Costa Rica, as it turns out, is no great exception. Except for the deserts of Mexico and parts of Chile and Peru and South America, Latin America has an overabundance of water. It's just that the people have historically taken it for granted, and 98% of them are pretty much totally ignorant about renewable resources, recycling, preservation, and forward thinking. And so they do as humans usually do, and they gobble up their resources until there's a crisis, and then they start worrying about it. Now, the real reason why Costa Rica had such an abundant water supply is because they had a very tiny population to landmass. 25 years ago, when I was there, the population was 2.5 million, and now it's double that, 5 million or so. So today, they have the same water resources with maybe triple the use, because all that new development and population since then were developments catering to tourism and gringos who use 3 to 4 times as much water than the average Latin per day. Not to mention, people on vacation don't care how much water they use or waste. That said, Costa Rica's days of plentiful water are over. And I mean really over. Now, listen to this. According to the Latin American business newspaper, El Financiero, the water shortage in Costa Rica has caused the Costa Rican Institute of Aqueducts and Sewers to severely limit new real estate development and building permit approvals in certain areas of Costa Rica. The Costa Rican Institute of Aqueducts and Sewers supplies water to about half of Costa Rica's population. Other sources of water come from community-managed reservoirs, which serve the other half of the population. Just recently, the Costa Rican government has said all these outside, non-governmental water sources must be, for the first time, registered and regulated by the government. And it says since many Costa Rican communities missed the September 1st deadline to register, they are now denying all construction permits in those areas until they do so. Then the article says, unrelated to registering private water sources, the water shortages in general are causing some hotels that must now buy their water from the outside to project that the cost of trucking in water will shortly force them to close their doors. And it says, Costa Rica's agricultural sector is also struggling mightily. At least 20 million has been lost in 2014 as a direct result of water shortages, according to the Costa Rican Agriculture and Livestock Minister. Okay, here it comes. Now, listen to this and let it sink in. In the Costa Rican department or canton of Atenas, I know it well, residents have been staging protests over their water shortages. It turns out residents in this area have access to municipal water for, get this, 3 hours a day from 3 a.m. to 6 a.m., and that public schools have been forced to regularly suspend classes as a result of that water shortage. In fact, according to the Tico Times, last year, thousands of Costa Rican residents went months without a single drop of municipal water. And local government sources are reporting that this year, in 2015, in the north-central province of Heredia, it'll be much worse. And by the way, I used to live in Heredia where everyone was on municipal water. And let me just fill you in on something. Back then, 20, 25 years ago, unlike most of the rest of Latin America, upper middle and wealthy classes of people in Costa Rica were almost always hooked up to the local municipal supply because you always got a constant high pressure flow. Just like up in Cleveland where water pressure was always constant, no one would have a cistern or a pump. That was unthinkable. The same thing went for Costa Rica. Even in the wealthy gated subdivisions, they'd never put in their own well or tower or reservoir because municipal water came through the pipes like a gusher 24/7. And now the worst has come. No one's prepared, so there's panic. Even the wealthy folks now have to truck in water. You think that's a pain in the ass? Well, listen to this. In yet another very touristy part of Costa Rica called Guanacaste, the water shortage is so bad 9 hotels in Tamarindo are about to close their doors. By the way, back then I used to stay in a certain hotel in Tamarindo Beach all the time. That was when the tourists were just starting to trickle in. Back then, there were just a few mom-and-pop hotels, and the big ones you see there now, they weren't even on the drawing board yet. Meanwhile, listen to this. Can governments be any stupider? The article goes on to say, in the face of this, the Costa Rican Tourism Institute, ICT, announced earlier that construction permits for 8 new Guanacaste hotel projects have already been issued, including a very large 500-plus room project in La Cruz. And it goes on to say at least 23 large hotels are under construction now that haven't even opened yet. And there are more hotel projects with approved construction permits that have not broken ground yet. And now the topper. Listen to this. One high-level government spokesman said this. With all hydro development in the hands of the government here, and with hydroelectric responsible for 75 to 80% of our power generation, any shortfall in rain can, within 1 to 2 weeks, result in reduced electricity generation and rolling blackouts. And now, unfortunately, he said, the odds have caught up with us now in Costa Rica. For so long now, in the press and in the first world media, we've been touting our very high percentage of hydroelectric generation as the best of all worlds, hoping to become completely independent of any and all outside energy sources. Meanwhile, we've become dangerously dependent on something we have absolutely no control over, rainfall. Okay, it's me again. That's real good news out of Costa Rica, huh? Reason 2346, why you really have to stay far away from that place. There you have it. If you're planning to live, work, play, and or retire in Costa Rica, with all undue respect, I'd like to say you're frickin' nuts. And furthermore, if you got any land or investments or businesses there, put them up for sale while you still can, if you still can, and get the hell off the gringo tourist trail. And to be even clearer about it, all you dumbasses who keep listening to that advice from International Living, haven't you figured out that once they claim the next new great gringo retirement paradise, the next so-called Costa Rica, it's already too late. It's all over. That said, Costa Rica has a severe water problem. Wait a minute. Is it just Costa Rica? Well, not quite. This article from Spanish BBC last week says, in Sao Paulo, Brazil, the biggest city in South America, with over 20 million people, hard to imagine that, huh? Anyway, it says, in Brazil's and South America's largest city, a historic record dry season and ever-increasing demand for water has led to a punishing drought. Even though, it says, it's been actually raining quite heavily over the last few days, that has barely made a drop of difference. It says the main reservoir system that feeds this immense city is still so dangerously low that it would take months, maybe years, of intense heavy rainfall for water levels to return to anything like normal. And everyone knows, even some government people, that's not going to happen. So then how does a country that produces an estimated 12% of the world's fresh water end up with such a terrible and chronic shortage, especially in the biggest, most economically important city in all of South America? Then it goes on to say, it's interesting to note that both state, local, and federal governments have been very slow in acknowledging the crisis at all. Meanwhile, at the main Cantariara reservoir system, which feeds most of the city's insatiable demand for water, things have reached rock bottom. Huge pipes never seen before are now sticking way up above the reservoir because, for the first time in history, the reservoir is dipping below 10% of its normal capacity. In other words, the levels are down by a whopping 90%. Then the article goes on to say, as never before, the odd local villager now wanders into the reservoir, hoping for a temporary windfall of fish that flounder in the tiny pools of water that remain. People who once depended entirely on that reservoir are now starting to carry as many jerry cans, empty plastic bottles, or buckets as they can muster, searching in vain for alternative places to fill up. Meanwhile, in another neighborhood farther away, for weeks now, pedestrians and cars have been lining up at an emergency well, some filling up and running back and forth to their homes twice a day. In fact, in some communities in and around Sao Paulo, there are homemade posters pinned to the gates and door frames of houses saying the same messages or plea, quote, "We need water, we need help." Now, the author of this article interviewed some people who were filling up at the emergency well and putting cans in their car. In this case, a guy named Gilberto and his wife. Now, he says they almost broke out into laughter when the author suggested to them that according to an interview with Sao Paulo state government officials, they said, quote, "The situation is manageable and there'll be no need for water rationing." To that, the guy filling up, Gilberto, said, "They must be living on another planet. There's been no water in our pipes for a month now. But here, it's not nearly as bad as it is in outlying communities where they've had water rationing since February, about a year." Then it goes on to say, Sao Paulo, and in fact all of Brazil, is a completely polluted country. It says, in the Sao Paulo vicinity itself, open sewers everywhere mean that the big city's rivers are completely polluted. They're now part of the problem instead of part of the solution during drought times because people are now going to the rivers and gathering up their water, completely untreated and polluted water. So then you might ask, is all this due to simple bad luck and the cyclical lack of rain? Well, according to Antonio Nobre, one of the country's most respected earth scientists and climatologists, he says there's plenty of evidence to say that continued deforestation in and around the Amazon region, that along with the almost complete disappearance of the once gigantic Atlantic forest region, both have drastically altered the Brazilian climate. In fact, he says if deforestation in the Amazon continues, Sao Paulo will dry up. If we don't act now, he says, we're lost. By the way, I doubt you realize the following. Number one, did you know that Brazil is the biggest coffee producer in the world? And it produces half or 50% of all the coffee that's used in espressos and cappuccinos, the Arabic coffee. And did you know that the average yield of coffee cherries, that's what they call them, from your average normal coffee tree or bush is around 100 kilograms of those little cherries a year? Now, half of that weight is in the seed or the berry. So what's that got to do with anything? Well, with this unprecedented drought in Brazil, instead of getting 50 kilograms of green coffee beans per bush or tree, this year they're getting about half that yield, which means next year, look for coffee prices to probably double. Just a little inside tip for you guys and gals out there who play the commodities markets. Now let's shift gears completely. The other day I was at one of these big convivios, you know, these Christmas parties everyone has down here. Some of them really quite big events. Anyway, I was sitting next to a guy who introduced himself to me, a medical doctor, a guy who actually did his specialty residency up in Texas, a gynecology residency. Like I had any use for that guy, right? Anyway, we got to talking about the usual things upscale Latins talk about once they return down here to Latin America and are living back in their home country again off the gringo tourist trail. They're just dying for a first world fix, which they think they're going to get by talking to a gringo like me. They generally love to talk about superficial, pointless, boring things like what's happening in Hollywood, the media, and the usual fallback position when they hear I'm from Chicago, Chicago Bulls, and U.S. sports. Now, I've noticed that even when you're with upscale Latin people like this, even successful rich kids whose daddies sent them to college up in the U.S., they almost never have a depth of knowledge, and when you start talking about anything in detail, that'll usually put a big damper on the whole encounter. But this time, as we spoke about illegal immigration pouring into the U.S., which is a hot topic down here with everyone these days, we hit on a very touchy but germane side topic that you won't hear anyone talk about in mixed company. Not even up in the States. It's just way too un-PC. Now, somewhere along the discussion, we were talking about wetbacks, you know, illegal aliens. And again, that term wetback is commonly used down here. It's not considered derogatory. And again, the word in Spanish, mojado. So, no nasty emails, please. Anyway, this gynecologist said that young Latin males, 20 years old, for example, have much higher testosterone levels than 20-year-old first world people. And he said they were about twice as fertile, which is one of the reasons why you see so many big families here in Latin America. 4 and 5 and 6 kids, and out in the boonies, sometimes 10 or even 12 kids. And he said, interestingly enough, People in his profession think that the very high fertility and testosterone rates here in Latin America are ubiquitous, not because there's something in the water or the food or the climate, but because there's something that's not there. That is the general absence of pesticides, herbicides, GMOs, prescription and non-prescription drugs, animal antibiotics, growth hormones, and birth control pills, etc., etc. All those artificial chemicals you see packed into the medicine cabinets of every first world family. Not to mention the hundreds of chemical additives you see in the boxes and the cans in the foods up in the States. And of course, this doc admitted all is not pure down here in Latin America, not by any means. Sure, chemicals and preservatives and additives have been trickling in down here, but with a big lag time. And when big transnational agricultural companies come in, they certainly spray the crops. But the reality is, down here, the GMO thing is just now starting to take off. And as for the OTC and prescription pharmaceutical craze up north, you'll only find first world style use of that stuff in the upper 1 or 2% of the very wealthy population. That's, of course, the gringo wannabe crowd. Stands to reason, right? So just remember, all you guys up in Milwaukee, Seattle, and Cleveland, your 20-something weekend gardener Julio or that Latin boy across the street blowing leaves, both those guys are packing big-time testosterone heat. And you're not. So does that mean you should lock your teenage girls and the women folk in the cellar? I don't know. Don't have any daughters myself. Now, another thing the specialist told me was that one of the very biggest and most promising pharmaceutical growth areas in the States is replacement testosterone therapy and fertility drugs for men. A phenomenon, like he said, is virtually non-existent down here in Latin America, except in that high-end 2% gringo wannabe crowd. How's that grab you? Anyway, like the gynecologist said, those crazy food additives have been around up in the States for like 50 or so years. And GMOs since, what, 1990? That's 25 years. Which ties in nicely to the fertility and testosterone thing in those boys in question. And he also says that young Latin boys who live in big cities have lower testosterone rates than country boys, too. Now, he said no one's done the testing yet, but he figures that young Latin illegals up in the States, if they're there for 5 years or more and get shipped back, he's sure, after being exposed up in the first world to those chemicals and additives, etc., that their testosterone levels would drop. And with that, I said, if I were you, I'd watch who I brought that subject up to. This is a very Catholic country, you know. You might get stoned. I'm sure there's a lot of people who don't want to hear that message.
Way down among Brazilians, coffee beans grow by the billions, so they've got to find those extra cups to fill. They got an awful lot of coffee in Brazil. You can't get cherry soda, 'cause they've got to sell their quota, and the way things are, I guess they never will. They've got a zillion tons of coffee in Brazil.